Because I'm here, it's holy.
I was very close to my Aunt Grace. Maybe some of you remember that I've told some stories about my Aunt Grace from the pulpit before. She was about 14 years older than my dad and his twin brother, and she served as a role as mother to him and grandmother to me. And beyond genetics, my Aunt Grace and I were kindred spirits. She would be about 107 if she was still alive today. When I was in my 20s and newly married, she told me a story from early in her marriage. I don't really remember the context or why she told it, but she said that she had planned an elaborate surprise party for her husband's birthday, my Uncle Martin, but he just never showed up. He had gone fishing without telling her he was going to do that and didn't come back until very late that night. It was his birthday, he reasoned, so he figured he could do what he wanted to do. I took in a deep breath. You must have been devastated, putting myself in her shoes. I was so shocked and disappointed for her. And so I said, weren't you devastated? What did you do? And she just kind of shrugged and said, well, you are born alone and you die alone. So you need to realize that and get used to it. No, she really was a cheerful, optimistic person, but... And she actually didn't say that with any bitter tone at all. She was kind of matter-of-fact about it. Now, you and I might want better communication in our friendships and most of our intimate relationships, and I think it is best to clear the air. You might want to let your spouse know if you're planning to go fishing to the middle of the night. And it's good to figure out what breaks down when communication goes that way. And my Aunt Grace, as she would say herself, was born into a different generation of women. Proverb 31 was her guide. A good woman is hard to find and worth far more than diamonds. Her husband trusts her without reserve and never has reason to regret it. Never spiteful, she treats him generously all her life long. She would have been expected to just go with whatever her husband thought was best. But much to my husband's chagrin, that was not the lesson that my Aunt Grace taught me with her story, with her words, you are born alone and you die alone. She was not, in fact, alone much. She was a Baptist minister's wife, expected to serve the parish for free. She raised 5 children and was a high school history teacher and involved aunt, great aunt, and grandmother. She was the hub of the wheel for our family. And her circle of friends. And she was much beloved, probably because, in fact, she did seem to treat everyone generously her whole life long. And her kindness seemed to come from a centered place of her faith. God, along with Jesus, were her support no matter what, a goodness that she could count on, love itself. You are born alone and you die alone, and yet you are supported and sustained by a great universal love she called God. Beyond that, I don't know much about her theology. She was a devoted American Baptist, and I was raised Unitarian Universalist. But those words, you are born alone and you die alone, have been useful to me as I plumb the depths of my own moments of loneliness. My own yearning for belonging to know I have a place here and now in the universe. Noticing feelings of being left out triggers another thought. Ah, yes, remember, I remember now. I'm born alone. I die alone. It's a fundamental human condition. And then I remember the paradox of that condition. I am alone, but I'm not alone. Because I am part of the universe, and the universe is in me. In fact, it's a scientific fact, as well as a human intuition. As Carl Sagan said, the nitrogen in our DNA, the calcium in our teeth, the iron in our blood, the carbon in our apple pies were made in the interiors of collapsing stars. We are made of stardust. Except for hydrogen, all the atoms that make each of us up were manufactured in red giant stars thousands of light years away and billions of years ago in time. Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "The power which resides in each of us is new in nature." Each of us is new in nature. In other words, each new person is a fresh assortment of atoms. So we are unique after all. We're a fresh assortment of atoms. We are each unique and connected. And suffering in the world is caused because, he says, we have lost our vital connection to our heritage, the universe. Emerson wrote, "The reason why the world lacks unity and lies broken and in heaps is because man is disunited with himself." You can imagine how that went over in early 19th century Boston. In fact, he likened the oversoul, the soul, or that great big unified universe as a kind of transparent eyeball, and a cartoonist apparently drew that up with him, his long gangly body and a big eyeball and a top hat walking around Boston. My early morning spiritual reading these weeks has been from a book I recommend by Richard Geldard entitled The Spiritual Teachings of Ralph Waldo Emerson. So Emerson would have us reattach the deeds of every day to the holy and mysterious recesses of life. Emerson says the single greatest barrier to growth and understanding is our tendency to let our minds sleep through the day. He calls us into an awareness of existence on a moment-by-moment basis, the fundamental but rare sense of presence that animates an authentic life. With this moment-by-moment stance within the mind, we can see into the heart of things, where, he says, the infinite lies stretched in smiling repose. Don't you love that? The infinite lies stretched in smiling repose. Emerson encourages us to have the courage to move beyond the fragmented self to a larger view. He says the truth arrives through what he calls lowly listening. He means listening to your mind, to your inside, as Shana invited the children to notice. Listening to your mind when you are still and have surrendered habitual ways of seeing yourself. Letting go those ideas of yourself and who you are and ought to be. Noticing your mind and its pattern of thought. How attached is your mind to ideas and judgments about yourself and others rather than what is really there in the moment? Emerson talked about the universal mind, which I mentioned a while ago, which has no personality and no finite identity. Letting go of personality, he suggested, is a way to eternal life. Well, in fact, it would probably be pretty boring around here without a bit of personality, wouldn't it? And we all have it. But the externalities of our life, how we'd like others to see us and how we see ourselves, sometimes block us from our connection with the universe, divine love, God. We are that being which is the one and the unity of all things. Emerson said, "I am nothing. I see all. I am part or particle of God." And we experience this unity in the heart as a feeling of great expansiveness. I was thinking this morning as I was driving to church that Stephanie Rutt in her yoga classes used to say, "It's all about you, and it's not about you at all." A few years ago, I participated in a 9-day silent monastic retreat at the Insight Meditation Center in Barre, Massachusetts. It's a Buddhist retreat center in the Vipassana tradition out of Southeast Asia. It's called a monastic retreat because all the teachers are ordained monks in that tradition. And so, except for occasional teachings by the monks, the sound of the gong and chanting, we were to keep silent the whole time, 9 days, during meals and during our assigned jobs like pot scrubbing. That's my favorite job. And the lead, I'm not kidding, actually. If you know me well, you know that I really love my Dharma job on these retreats because it gives me something to do. Anyway, the lead teacher was Ajahn Suchito, who leads a monastery in England. And we each engaged in our individual practices, dealing with the vagaries of our own minds and bodies. And there were probably about 100 attendees, and we weren't to talk to each other. And all other kinds of communication, eye contact, you know, there are lots of ways we communicate, all of that was discouraged. Ajahn Suchito's teaching that resonated the most with me that week was the fact that our attachment to certain ideas about ourselves causes suffering. I could see it in myself, and I could see it in other people. Our feelings of loneliness arise out of our idea that we need to be somebody. You want to be somebody. Our idea of self drives our compulsions, and self is usually, think about it, not too happy with reality. Self is never satisfied. As soon as it has what it wants something more. He invited us to notice what territory we are living in. Is it the mind of regret or resentment or jealousy? Those habits of mind will disconnect you from other people and the whole universe. You can count on it. Tara Brach calls this the trance of unworthiness. We embark on one self-improvement project after another. We hold back and play it safe rather than risk failure. We withdraw from the experience of the present moment and we focus on other people's faults. The roots of the trance are in thinking of yourself as a separate self in the first place. So after a few days on that retreat, I found my mind calming down, my body relaxing. You're just instructed to move more and more slowly. And I had more and more moments of finding the details around me extraordinary, little epiphanies, you might say. James Joyce wrote that an epiphany was the sudden revelation of the whatness of a thing. The revelation of the whatness of a thing. The moment when the soul of the commonest object seems to us radiant. It was the end of April and early May, and I watched the lilac blossom buds open. I could see them moving. Such beauty and such joy. And after the last sit that ended about 10 o'clock at night, walking back to the dorm from the meditation hall, I felt swept up in the beauty and vastness of the starry night sky. There were moments when the boundaries between myself and the rest of the universe disappeared. Joyce Rupp describes this in her poem, Star Breath. It's in her wonderful book, The Cosmic Dance. With the first sigh of the evening star, my heart responds to a distant touch, a wisp of recognition, a waft of joy. Life-giving breath of the galaxies sails through the heavens into my grasping, yearning spirit, uniting me in the marrow of my soul. Star breath washes over me like God breath, filling the soul of a new creation, awakening my soul's withered bones, lifting them into lightness and dance. I open my small, isolated self to the stars. I am once again healed of my disparity, the falsehood of a separate identity. So I was feeling really good after those 9 days. A fully integrated human being, one with the universe, rested, filled with a sense of peaceful, gentle happiness, and filled with an immense love for my family, all of you here, my fellow meditators, my teachers. And then the retreat ended. People started talking. After deep, deep quietude, personality exploded onto the scene. With voices, inflections, mannerisms, who knew that guy would sound like that? Who knew that woman would move like that? You know, the stuff of personality. People clustered into groups, talking amongst themselves in an animated way. These people all knew each other. They belonged. I didn't know anyone. I felt left out. But because of all that wise teaching, I noticed those feelings I had, and I laughed. I laughed at how quickly my sense of self as separate and unworthy of attention was getting the best of me. Even after 9 days, 9 days of meditation, little epiphanies, and wise words. It goes to show you how strong our need is to belong. And you don't need to go on a 9-day silent retreat to experience a moment-to-moment life that can restore your connection with others and the universe. You are not the only one experiencing moments of loneliness. When you've been excluded in a certain circumstance, it doesn't mean that you don't belong in general. I loved Shana's story. Deep down inside, you belong no matter what. It's a human thing. It's not just you having those feelings. Others have the same difficulties, but often don't show it, which can lead us to feel isolated and discouraged. But you don't have to do anything. You do not have to do anything to belong to the universe. It is simply a fact of your life. You need merely to notice it and to remember it. You are born alone and you die alone. But I was thinking maybe it's more like your big toe. You can consider your toe alone, separate from the rest of your body, kind of a separate part. But it has its meaning as part of your whole. In fact, it's pretty hard to wiggle your big toe. You can try it now. Wiggle your big toe without wiggling all your toes. The big toe belongs to you. It allows you to walk through the world and gives you balance. Just as you, lovely, lovely you, just as you, you unique bundle of atoms, you bring life into the world. You are always a part of the universe, the great love some call God, and no one and no smaller sense of self can ever take that away from you. Emerson again. Within us is the soul of the whole, the wise silence, the universal beauty to which every part and particle is equally related, the eternal one, the eternal one. When it breaks through our intellect, it is genius. When it breathes through our will, it is virtue and justice. When it flows through our affections, it is love. Amen. Let's join together in singing our last hymn.